The following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years, and it wouldn't be possible without our local radio affiliates. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area, and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com.
The fastest hour in radio starts now.
Welcome along. Appreciate you being here. 2 decades strong, working on 3. That's Voices of Montana. Appreciate you making us a part of your Montana mornings for oh my gosh, 22 years, and we continue here. Tom Schultz alongside. Let's just get right into it. You know, there's a lot of things kind of breaking here as we cover election integrity. Unfortunately, Tim Fox is with us here today. Hey, Tim, that's a joke because you're going to get all the questions that I couldn't get answered by my research today. So how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Tom. Thanks for having me on for this retrospective where we celebrate the collaborative efforts of so many Montanans to get things done and leave things in a better place than we found them.
Yeah, is it hard? Tim Fox, by the way, Montana's Attorney General, served 2 terms. Is it hard to be here, Tim, or is it sort of as good as you look back and look at some of these accomplishments?
Well, as you might imagine, Tom, it's bittersweet. You know, I've been an honor to be Montana's Attorney General for the last 8 years. And I've enjoyed this job, and unfortunately I'm term limited and move on. But many others have gone before me and had similar circumstances and continue to make an impact for our state. But you know, the good news is that, the 800 or so dedicated individuals at the Montana Department of Justice will still be there. We will continue to do great work, I'm sure, irrespective of who's in the corner office. And really, as I said, you know, most of what we've accomplished, if not all of it in the last 8 years, has been the work of many, many different people, organizations. Montanans are, you know, I think unique in our country in terms of our ability to collaborate, reach across the aisle, listen, be civil. And there's exceptions to every rule, but certainly Congress could take a few lessons from what we do here in Montana.
Before we do that, and you know, I'm begging to ask the question that, you know, the first thing that comes to mind. But there's some news, and Montana's Attorney General has been a part of this program. We do a monthly check-in. Sometimes it's more frequently than that as news breaks. The Attorney Generals or Attorneys General from many states have supported protections for federal judges, and there's been news recently about it was a man being arrested for threatening to injure a federal judge. This goes back to October. But as we see more and more angst, I guess, and maybe it's not managed or channeled correctly by individuals for whatever reasons, they threaten federal officials. Or, you know, they'll threaten even election officials. They'll threaten everyday Montanans, for that matter, depending on how unhinged they can become. But talk about this recent support for legislation to add a little more protections on for federal judges.
Sure. So I joined 51 bipartisan attorneys general, Republicans, Democrats, in sending a letter to Congress to urge them to pass a piece of legislation that's designed to protect the safety of federal judges and their employees. It's called the Daniel Andrel Judicial Security and Privacy Act. And you know, maybe it's a little known fact, it's nothing new, but since 1979, there have been 4 federal judges who've been murdered. District Judge John Wood, District Judge Richard Duranco, Circuit Judge Robert Vance, and District Judge John Roll were all killed by deranged individuals, many of which who had information about where the judges lived, where they worked, what their work patterns were. And then more recently, you'll recall, in fact, Daniel's Laws, this piece of legislation is called. It comes from the fact that a district judge, Esther Salas of the U.S. District Court of New Jersey, had a deranged individual come to her home and open up as the door was opened and shot and killed her son, Daniel, and very seriously injured her husband as well. He has survived, but it's been a tough go for him. So this piece of legislation is designed to protect judges in general by requiring federal agencies to maintain the confidentiality of the judge's personal identifiable information. It will prohibit data brokers from selling, licensing, trading, purchasing, or otherwise providing or making available for consideration judges' personal identifiable information. It'll empower the states to take similar steps to protect not only federal judges, but state and local judges as well. But, you know, you're right. I think it's not a new phenomenon, but, you know, certainly when you're in a position of leadership, a high-profile position, particularly as a federal judge who's making important decisions about election law or immigration or environmental law or whatever it may be, they unfortunately can become the target of deranged individuals who, you know, maybe are seeking to get some press or otherwise just are seeking to do something bad. So 51 attorneys general, bipartisan work. It's right along the theme of my term as president of the National Association of Attorneys General, where I promoted statesmanship and civility and finding those things that we can agree on.
A true statesman himself, Montana Attorney General Tim Fox, is with us here as the fifth of five children from Hardin, Montana. We'll talk about going from Hardin, Montana to the University of Montana. Maybe some people know this, others don't. I'm aware of it, and I always appreciate it because I'm a sports fan. You go back, and if you want to type in Big Sky Conference, track and field, Tim Fox, you're going to pull up a little bit of things here and there as a one of the few double champions in the 110 high hurdles, I think, and the 400-meter hurdles, Tim. That, to me, is quite an feat. But as you say, I think it was a Twitter post a while back or whatever it was, you were a little faster back then and had a little more hair.
Yeah, so that was 40 pounds ago. Excuse me, 40 years ago. But again, you know, I think about all the people that mentored me early in life, high school, college, coaches, teachers, and many others who invested in my life and encouraged me when I was down. You know, nothing we do in life can we do alone. So, you know, it's been a good life for me. I'm not done yet. And looking forward to what's next.
Yeah, I suppose you've been asked that question a million times, Tim. I don't think you're going to rush yourself into that decision, or maybe you've talked to people who've got the wheels spinning for you.
You know, I'm still Attorney General, Tom, and so I'm going to finish strong. We've been doing a lot of great work, still going into the office, making sure that the transition with the new Attorney General-elect, Austin Knutson, is smooth. I've empowered my staff to provide his transition group with resources and access. I moved out of my office last month and got sent a General Services Division of the Department of Administration to come in early and get that office all painted and cleaned up so that Austin can move in early. It wasn't something that was afforded to me when I was elected. I didn't get into that office until the weekend before I was sworn in. So we've gone the extra mile to try to make sure that Attorney General-elect Knutson and his team have all the information and resources they need to be successful. And I'm looking forward to what's next, but want to make sure that we go out in style.
How does that transition take place, Tim? You have a little conversation. I'm sure, you know, Austin, as he had been on the air, had talked about some of the great work that that you had done and other previous attorney generals. And you know, that's a position that has a lot of carryover.
Yeah, it does. You know, Austin will inherit some lawsuits that we filed. For instance, we sued the state of Washington together with the state of Wyoming and the United States Supreme Court over Washington's decision to deny coal port expansion. Recently, we joined a lawsuit with the U.S. Department of Justice and 11 other attorneys general over antitrust activities of Google. You know, a lot of things pending. And, you know, the important thing there is that we have continuity. We are making sure that Attorney General-elect Knutson's staff are briefed as to what's going on, and you know, so that they have a full understanding of what you know they need to be doing. I've offered to meet with Austin. He is pretty busy, and he's not had the opportunity to meet with me, but that option's still open if he'd like to do that. So, you know, you get elected in November, and you're required to have a staff, and a budget, a legislative agenda, have your feet firmly on the ground, all by January 5th when the new elected leaders are sworn in. I can tell you that in my experience, we were drinking from the fire hose, yeah. I'll tell you what. And while outgoing Attorney General Steve Bullock afforded a lot of transition opportunities for us, wasn't anything near to what we're doing for Austin Knutson and his people, because we want to make sure that he's successful and that the people of Montana are well served. So it's good stuff. It's how it works. And we're proud to be a part of it.
Yeah. I want to kind of go into, I'm very curious about the status of that Washington lawsuit. I'm also very curious. I know it was recently filed, the Google antitrust. That was more with the search engine, but with censorship, apparent censorship anyway, of these big tech companies. Do you have any updates in particular on that Washington lawsuit? Now, that's been a couple of years, and I think that is real critical. I know it's not entirely, you're not going it alone, but that one deals with certain aspects of the Constitution that need to be defended.
Right. The Commerce Clause, you know, the our founders put that in there because they knew from experience that at that point in time, the original 13 colonies, the coastal states, really had a leg up on the inland states and their ability to export their goods. And that's what's going on here. Washington's decided through Governor Inslee, who's been very strident about his anti-coal positions, that he's pretty much said that we're not going to allow any Powder River coal from Montana or Wyoming to be exported here. That's unfortunate. It violates the Commerce Clause. That actually is a lawsuit that we filed this year. And where it stands is we've filed a petition for leave to file a bill of complaint. That's how things start when one state sues another. And the Supreme Court has asked the U.S. Department of Justice Solicitor General to chime in with their opinions about our lawsuit. Now, if that were a Trump administration, U.S. Department of Justice chiming in, I'd be pretty confident that they would say, yeah, this suit should go on and the petition should be granted. I don't know that that's going to happen before the end of the year. Come January 20th, we'll potentially have a new administration with Joe Biden. My guess is they'll flip everything that good that's gone on in terms of the U.S. Department of Justice, EPA, and other federal agencies. Austin Knutson's going to have his hands full just like I did in 2012 when I was elected, and promoting federalism and the balance between states' rights and the federal government. This may be one of those areas, but, it's too early to tell whether or not that Montana and Wyoming versus Washington suit will go forward, but I'm hopeful that it will.
Would that be the only recourse in this circumstance, a suit going forward?
Yeah, there is a case that the coal port owners filed against the state of Washington that's basically on hold, depending on a couple of things, including this lawsuit. And so I don't hold out. You know, this is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Ultimately, perhaps that case will get up to the United States Supreme Court. But you know, the thing about it is when these environmental groups and obstructionist coastal states do these kinds of things, they make it very difficult for companies to plan, to get the funding for what they want to do. And eventually what they're counting on is that the promoters of the coal port expansion will just go away, fold up their tables, and go home.
That happens in a lot of circumstances. We'll come on back, much more to discuss here as we look back and look forward. Tim Fox here with us on Voices of Montana. He's Montana's top law enforcement officer. There's a story out of 2016 that exemplifies that. It is Tim Fox with us, our attorney general here on Voices of Montana. Tim, again, I appreciate your time and appreciate your public service here. I'll get to that 2016 story a bit later on. I wanted to, as I kind of alluded to at the start of the show, we've been looking at election integrity. I know that you filed, I think it was just an amicus brief in that Texas case, although you had indicated that that might likely not go forward with the Supreme Court. There was a case that you also filed in defending Montana's ballot procedure prior to the primary election, which was key as well. I have a lot of unanswered questions about why the courts don't seem to pick up on this, the testimony, the affidavits, and also this statistical or analytical, maybe it's anecdotal kind of evidence. But in a lot of cases, they have looked past that and said there's not enough to really investigate. Maybe it's because, Tim, the ask is to decertify elections, and that's a big ask. But what are your thoughts as we are in this time right now when it comes to defending our elections?
Well, one of the cases you alluded to was before the Montana Supreme Court, where some groups here in Montana wanted to extend the deadline for voting in the primary election well beyond election day. And so that's highly out of the ordinary. We learned that many of the counties were using these standard reply envelopes for return of ballots that wouldn't be date canceled. So there'd be no way for election officials to know when the voters had dropped those ballots in the mail. And we successfully defended that. The Supreme Court unanimously here in Montana said you can't extend the voting deadline. And to answer your question, you know, each case has to rise or fall on its own facts and law. And it's hard for me to second guess what courts and other jurisdictions are doing on things that I'm not involved in. But ultimately, I think we can all agree that we want free and fair elections that are legal, that follow the law. And, you know, when we have such a widespread mail-in ballot that we really weren't as a nation prepared for. Some states were that do this, have done this for years. Other states were not. What we found is that we were very ill-prepared across the country for that. And, you know, we've learned a lot of lessons, unfortunately, the hard way. So anyway, you know, we filed that amicus brief with the 16 other states. And really all we asked there, we didn't allege that there was any fraud. We just said, listen, the Constitution says right within it in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 4, that only the state legislatures can set state election law. And we felt that it was important that the Supreme Court at least address that issue and say, can a governor change state law? Can a secretary of state, can a local election official decide, well, we're not going to verify signatures, whatever the case may be, even though the state law passed by the legislature might require it? And that, unfortunately, is an issue that will remain unresolved. The Supreme Court decided to deny Texas's petition for leave to file a bill of complaint on procedural issues, saying the Texas Attorney General didn't have standing. But, you know, we consulted with a lot of great attorneys on the law, and we understood that the claim about Section 2, Article 2, Section 2, Section 1, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution means something, and we should understand what does it mean.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the electorate, the electoral vote now has been cast, and it'll be up to Congress to certify that vote. Personally, I think it's time to move on. We need to learn from what happened this go-round and make sure it never happens again.
Yeah, and that's what I'm encouraging at this point, too, is that, and I'm thankful for it. I know that there are some, maybe it's spider webs that we can get caught in as we walk this out, but we need a good scrubbing of these and a good understanding, and so it's going to do us a lot of good in the years to come. Let's take a quick call. Casey, we got a news break upcoming. Casey from Great Falls, KQDI, 1450 AM. Appreciate your close attention to election integrity here. I'm going to take this news break first, though, Casey. So stand by. He's got a question, Tim. As I say, I know that you don't have all the answers, but this will involve the Electoral College. So, Casey, stand by. Got to take a quick headline break. There is news breaking across the state, so we're on it. Hey, if you're heading to Billings to explore or do business or shop, remember to be Montana aware. Keep residents and visitors safe and keep businesses open. Learn more at visitbillings.com COVID-19. Here's Brian with news.
Members of the Electoral College cast Montana's three votes for Republican President Donald Trump in a meeting at the state capitol Monday. In Montana, electors are bound by the state's popular vote. Political parties each pick three electors, and the electors from whichever party wins the presidential race vote in the Electoral College. The Montana Department of Labor and Industry issued $12.8 million in unemployment insurance payments for the week of December 7th through December 11th. The $200 weekly interim pandemic assistance benefit available for a four-week period ending December 19th accounted for nearly 30% of that amount. There's a new study from the Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research at the University of Montana. It found, compared to past years, Montanans deem visitors to be slightly less patient, less polite, less environmentally responsible, and less sensitive to the Montana way of life. With Montana News Headlines, I'm Brian Bennett.
Record big tobacco settlements, helping tackle DUI offenders, protecting kids from sex offenders and human trafficking, forming partnerships. Some of the accomplishments we'll talk about here in a bit with Tim Fox, Montana's Attorney General, term limited, and closing out his term here at the end of the month. Tim, thanks again for being here. Let's quickly go to the phones. Just you're one of the smartest guys we know, Tim, so you get all these questions. From KQDI, 1450 AM, Casey is listening in Great Falls. And Casey, thanks for calling.
Hi, Casey. I have a brief comment on the November 3rd election. I watched everything I could watch. There was a lot of it being, downplayed and kind of hidden from on the Internet. But they had hearings broadcast in Michigan and court proceedings in Nevada and in Wisconsin and also in in other places, but the point I've seen a great deal of evidence of what they say, quote unquote, irregularities and all types of strange happenings, and also centering on the machine that was counting the votes in most of these states. I think all these states, and some I don't know if Montana's in that category on the Dominion system, but. They just came out with a report yesterday, finally, after the Electoral College was certified, saying that it was highly subject to on-hands, in real-time adaptability or change in the system. I wanted to ask Mr. Fox also the idea of the governor and the Supreme Court or the court system getting involved in the changes of the electoral process. And I got a question, the main question, this is just a comment, a little bit short comment on Montana. Seems like the governor got into that territory and when he delegated to the counties the absentee ballots. So we're not completely clean here, I don't think either. It's just that it didn't affect our elections like it did in these swing states.
Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say that's kind of the distinction here. Some people have asked, you know, how were Pennsylvania and Georgia and some of those other states different? And those were close margins of error where irregularities in the election may have changed the outcome in those states. In Montana, you know, Donald Trump won in a landslide. And, you know, so you can't really claim that there was any irregularities that would have changed the outcome here in Montana. And, of course, the Montana courts have ruled that the governor can do what he did with respect to giving discretion to the counties to have a mail-in ballot or not. So a lot of moving parts here. And as you mentioned, you know, depending on where you get your news and your information, I would suggest to Montanans that they not get it from the social media posts and that kind of thing. And they do their independent investigations. But it's hard, I think, in the atmosphere we have with COVID-19, the emotions running high, the importance of the presidential election to all Americans. You know, it's been difficult for many, many people to act in a rational and reasonable manner with respect to their messaging and their comments. That's unfortunate. And I think we need to circle back, and we're going to have to, you know, at every level of government, we're not only going to have to look at what happened in this election cycle, but we need to look at the lessons learned in the pandemic. What did we do right? What did we do wrong? What could we do better? I hope to be involved in some of those discussions, even though I won't be an elected official. Our legislature here in Montana will hopefully address some of the anomalies and lessons learned. But, you know, my hope is that Montanans and Americans in general can come together, look for those things that we can agree on, you know, have the debates, have the disagreements, do that in a civil way, and get on with the nation's business and make our country stronger because of the things that we've learned in the last year or so. So appreciate the question, Casey.
Casey, thank you for your call. Why don't you stand by? You may have another specific question we'll get to. We've got a hard breakup coming here. And then we'll go on to some of these things that have made a difference in Montana over the 8 years that Montana's Tim Fox has been our Attorney General. Back with more Voices in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483. And join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
You know, we talk about Attorney General Tim Fox as he's coming to the end of his term there, and what's he going to do next? There's a guy up in the Flathead who's been doing what he's been doing and a great job of it for over 45 years in the timber industry, and that's Chuck Rohde of Stoltz Lumber. And he had just announced his retirement, a nice article out of the Daily Interlake. Our listeners in Kalispell on 1180 AM KOFI, I'm sure enjoying that. Chuck's going to come on the program on Friday and discuss, you know, the challenges and some of the accomplishments as we look at the timber industry from his perspective four decades. Tim, you know Chuck, don't you?
I do, and congratulations, Chuck, on your retirement. You know, Chuck's been one of the great leaders in Montana, not just in the timber industry, but as a whole. And you're right, over his, four decades of work, he's seen and experienced a lot. But it's important to note that he has been instrumental in providing livelihoods for many, many Montanans, not just with Stoltz Lumber, but the loggers out in the field and the carpenters and the home builders. You know, it's a great story, and I wish him all the best.
Yeah, gosh. You know, we look at Montana's timber industry and how, you know, we still have a timber industry in this state, and I think that's a credit to people like Chuck. You go and look at the other states around where the environmental community has really forced the timber industry to fold in a lot of places. But and we've lost a lot of mills here as well, but we still have some of that infrastructure in place. So, you know, we'll look. And I think I got, I shouldn't say I don't have this person lined up, but we'll be talking more about the timber industry and what they're looking forward to in this 2021 session. Montana's Attorney General Tim Fox is with us, elected in 2012, as I talk about frequently here, the fifth of five children. He was an adopted member of the Apsaluka Nation, the Crow Tribe, right there out of Hardin, Montana. I got to finish up here, Tim, with Casey. He wanted to ask the question procedurally if there's anything in the Constitution that can be done right now. He specifically said something about three instances. You can determine maybe the counting of the electors in the Congress. Do you know of any other kind of procedure constitutionally that, from his perspective, and as he's questioning this, might allow any kind of restitution?
Well, so I think one of the things you just referenced was that Congress actually certifies the electoral vote. There's been some talk about the House and the Senate essentially voting to not necessarily decertify the electoral vote, but flip it and go for President Trump's reelection. You know, I think that at this point would be a big mistake. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it would create a crisis across our nation that would be difficult to weather. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I think we're at that point where now that the electoral vote has been cast, Congress should do its job under the Constitution here in January. And we need to move on and find ways to unite Americans and make sure that we're all working together as best we can.
Yeah, I think you might see that. As a matter of fact, today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell congratulated Democrat Joe Biden, calling him president-elect. So there's going to be a stronger movement on the move-on crowd. What, Tim, as you look back, what was the hardest thing that you accomplished? What, you know, when you got this done finally, You looked around, you shook hands, and you said, "Boy, we got that over the edge."
Well, there could be a lot of candidates there, but I guess I'd have to say that, you know, shortly after I came into office, there was a big dispute in Missoula with the University of Montana campus, the City of Missoula Police Department, the County, Missoula County, with the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division swooping in and announcing an investigation, which is totally unprecedented. You don't announce investigations in advance. They basically came to the conclusion, from my point of view, that there was guilt before there was any kind of investigation. But the allegation was that the county, the university, the city were violating the civil rights of its citizens by not properly investigating and prosecuting allegations of sexual assault. There wasn't really anything in the law that required me to intervene and interject myself in that, but things were going from bad to worse when the county sued the U.S. Department of Justice and U.S. Department of Justice on February 14th of 2014, I think it was, issued a scathing long letter saying that the county had violated the civil rights of its citizens. So I contacted the U.S. Attorney's Office. I contacted the U.S. Department of Justice, the Missoula County Attorney, the Missoula County Commissioners, tried to bring them all together. There was a lot of pushback from all sides, and eventually my office, with the help of people like then my chief deputy, Mark Mattioli, now my chief deputy, John Bennion, and a lot of other great folks, we were able to get everybody to sit down and work out a solution. And we came to a written agreement that essentially caused the U.S. Department of Justice to butt out. But I took the brunt and the burden of determining if there were things that needed to be fixed. We did a lot of work to fix the problem. The Missoula County Commissioners deserve a lot of credit for stepping up and agreeing to spend some money for things like victim advocates and improving their system. Ole Olson, who is an assistant attorney general and a prosecutor in my office, led the charge to develop a prosecutor's manual on sexual assault. I made a commitment to then Attorney General Eric Holder that we would take the lessons learned and apply them nationwide. And as you might recall, Tom, that ended up being the basis for the work that we did on the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative, which has proven to actually solve a couple of cold cases where people had sexually assaulted someone and had gone scot-free for a while. We were able to change the definition of consent in our sexual assault laws so that victims were no longer blamed. We added some personnel in the U.S. Department of Justice, or excuse me, the Montana Department of Justice to better improve our reaction to sexual assault. We've, I think, done a better job of protecting Montanans, and I think we've instilled more confidence in our justice system that not only victims will get a fair shake, but alleged perpetrators will also get a fair shake. And I'm proud of all that work. We didn't do it alone. Many, many individuals, I mentioned a few, were instrumental in making that work. Representative Kim Dudick from Missoula was involved in that. Senator Diane Sands worked very hard. Margie McDonald there from Montana, or excuse me, from Billings. She worked on a felony strangulation law with us. The list goes on and on. And I think there's much more to do, and I'm hopeful that tomorrow's leaders will be involved.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like there's been a lot of focus on victims, and then also, you know, the families. You talk about the human trafficking, the sex offenders, the DUI work that you guys had done, making it safer for our children, and then consequently our children's children going forward. Did that just sort of develop? Did you just see a need and those things just kind of present themselves and you walk it out, Tim? Or was that more deliberate?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, I ran for attorney general once before, lost in 2008. There were talking points that you have, things that you learn about the job. And then I ran again in 2012. Much of what I talked about in the election, we ended up doing things like improving the registry, sexual assault registry, working on combating DUIs, expanding the 24/7 sobriety program to reduce DUI recidivism. Those were all things that I said I was going to focus on, and we did it well. Expanding the crime lab capabilities, making sure that our the services we provide at the crime lab were better and more timely, did that. But again, a lot of what you do in these positions are opportunities, if you will, that arise that maybe you weren't aware of, you didn't campaign on. You know, Blue Cross Blue Shield, when they sold out, that was a good example, and that led to the formation of the Montana Healthcare Foundation, which I'm very proud of that work. This whole Missoula County sexual assault thing wasn't on my radar initially. So, you know, good leaders, I think, look for opportunities to lead, and I'm fortunate to have had that opportunity to work with so many others to get something done.
I also want to talk about your focus on partnerships. Now, you carry that through with your position there with the National Association of Attorneys General, and it's a key focus. And that is something when you form those partnerships between the feds and the local law enforcement officers and tribal members as well, they need to be fostered a little bit. They need to be fed into and kind of maintained to a certain degree. But getting them off the ground, I think, is huge. So we'll come back after a quick break and talk about forming partnerships with Montana's Attorney General Tim Fox. A lot of things that we're talking about here with Montana's Tim Fox are probably something that you are aware of, and maybe not. You know, some of the work that was done in the crime lab expansion, that was key. That was huge. You hear law enforcement officers talk about how important that work is done. Also, funding for the Montana Law Enforcement Academy, some dorm space, some infrastructure for repair projects. Those are some of the things that go kind of under the radar a little bit. As Tim Fox, he also donates time and money and travel expenses to college athletic programs, as we talked about. He is a college athlete and a lot of years as a public servant for the state of Montana. Tim, again, thank you so much for that, and thank you for being on the program. You come on every month as Attorney General and answer the questions that we don't always get answers to from other folks. So thank you for that. I want to talk about forming partnerships. I know that was a part of your platform with as president of NAG, NAAG, the National Association of Attorneys General, and those things do pay dividends, but they kind of have to be watered a little bit, don't they?
You know, that's true. And Tom, during my tenure as Attorney General, we have really focused on trying to find those policy initiatives that most Montanans can agree on. And I'm very proud of the work that people like John Bennion, my Chief Deputy Attorney General, Liz Bangerter, who is my Central Services Division Administrator, Mike Milburn, who is a former Speaker of the House and my Chief of Staff. Liz and Mike are former legislators, and during the course of my tenure, in the four legislative sessions we had, we drafted 51 agency bills. I asked about half of those to be carried by Democrats, half by Republicans. Those were nurtured through the legislature. 49 of the 51 were passed overwhelmingly and signed into law by a Democrat governor. And we talked about some of those initiatives. We amended Montana's laws on human trafficking. We made initiatives on DUIs. We made changes to the crime lab. There's just so much that we can agree on. And if we focus on that, we can really make an impact, I think. And I felt so strongly about the deterioration of the political rhetoric nationwide, and certainly even among attorneys general, who are not immune to partisanship. Particularly since I think 46 out of the 50 state attorneys general are elected and the other four are appointed. The role of attorneys general across the nation have become very important, particularly during the President Obama and President Trump's tenure. And so when I knew that I was in the cycle to stand for election to be the president of the National Association, I came up with a presidential initiative that focused on civility and statesmanship. And I'm fortunate that the National Association has picked up on that. They have now established a Center for Excellence in Governance that will continue to focus on those attributes, if you will, that bring us together to find solutions, help us to be civil in our debates and our dialogue. That's important work. I think our country is screaming for that right now. And I'm very proud that Montana does it as well or better than most states. And my legacy hopefully will be that others will continue to pick up that banner and carry it so that we can get things done at every level of government and leadership.
You can hear more, Tim Fox. Are you going to continue to do? He does a podcast as with his position with the National Association of Attorneys General. It's called The People's Lawyer. And I don't know, maybe you're up to about 10 episodes or so. It's gotten better every time. Are you going to continue doing that, or is that you have to pass the yoke on that one?
So the new newly elected president of the National Association of Attorney General, Carl Racine, the Attorney General of Washington, D.C., we'll pick that up beginning next Good. Year, and we'll continue to have those. I might do a podcast in the future. Maybe you and I should talk about, you know, what would be interesting and important, not just to Montanans, but others. Maybe something on statesmanship and civility to continue focusing on those issues at a time when America desperately needs people to come together and find solutions.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. We got less than a minute here. What's the hardest laugh you ever had in office when you sat back in your office and just couldn't help yourself? What's the hardest laugh you've had in 8 years as an attorney general?
Whoa.
I know. That's left field stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I guess in general, you know, learning that you don't know it all and coming to the realization that you really need to surround yourself with great people who have a good disposition, a healthy sense of humor, and certainly that is something we all should have. The endorphins that are released when a person has that guttural laugh, let's look for that during this Christmas season. I want to wish your listeners a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays, and hopefully a better year and a happy year in 2021. Well, thanks, Montana, for letting me serve.
Well said, Tim. Merry Christmas to you. We'll see you down the road.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.